Welcome to Friday Night Live with your hosts, Ben, Rob, and Seth, the bearded guy over there. By now, you've probably seen today's breaking news, right? The Supreme Court overturned Roe v. Wade, and the Supreme Court has actually been up to a lot lately because they also recently said that the Constitution protects the rights to carry a gun outside the home. Woohoo! Now everyone seems to have a strong opinion on both sides of these issues. But that made us really wonder, is the media just fanning the flames of division here so that we don't all come together over food shortages and the economy? Well, speaking of the economy, this Friday Night Live, we're bringing you a special guest who's a financial expert. Ben Hedges is going to help you guys understand the current inflation, recessions, Bitcoin, and even get into discussions about the biggest companies that are controlling America's money. But if you're feeling like you need a break from all the breaking news, we've got you covered. We have a prep tip of the week, a dig deep Q&A where you can ask us all your burning questions in a weirder news segment, all on Rise.tv that'll have you laughing like no other show. So if you're watching us on Rumble, thanks for following us there so we can keep bringing you free content to share with all your friends and family. And if you want access to our full uncensored live shows, as well as series, movies, comedy, and more, please think about coming over to Rise.tv. We bring you so much content in return for your support of our work. And it's just $9.99 a month, which in inflation terms means it's like $1.99 a month. We can't wait to see you there with our awesome Rise.tv community and in our live chat. So let's get started with this Friday Night Live, all about babies, bullets, and Bitcoin. Here we go.
And Rob, you forgot to mention that you're actually coming to us live from the set of Saved by the Bell.
It's
the Golden Girls.
That's hilarious. Yeah, Golden Girls would probably be.
That was actually how I started the show yesterday, Seth. I said, coming to you from the set of the Golden Girls.
I think that painting is in Golden Girls in their living room.
You know what, Ben? This painting is so Golden Girls that it should be in Golden Girls. They should be ashamed of themselves for not having that painting there.
Yeah. All right. Well, so it's kind of ironic that all these things are going on today because I'm sure you guys heard, but there's a very rare alignment of the planets today. So five planets are going to be in alignment tonight.
Along with the moon, apparently, right?
Yes, with the moon. So it's going to be Mercury, Venus, Saturn, Mars, and then Earth, and then also the moon.
And so, Jupiter, it says.
Jupiter. So, because we're...
So it's not the Earth, it's the moon, Ben.
Yeah, it's the moon. Sorry. And so, okay, I guess there's some confusion because I guess this happened. They're saying it hasn't happened since 2004, but something else I'm reading says it actually has been since 1864 because even though, so these five planets will appear in the same sequence in the sky as they are in their respective orbits around the sun. And I guess that's what kind of makes it different in this case. But, anyway, so it's just kind of, you know, I was actually seeing a lot of sites that were kind of prophesizing that what this alignment meant was that the coming of like the second coming, actually.
Really?
Yeah.
I kind of feel like they say that every time there's some kind of alignment, right?
I kind of agree, but at the same time, well, honestly, the big one for me was in the Bible where it talks about the virgin and the stars with their the crown at their head and then the feet at her moon, and that was literally Virgo at a very specific time period. I can't remember the exact date. It was
You're losing me, bro.
2018. No, no, it was in our video that we talked about. And it was like it was exactly what was written in Revelation.
Oh, wow.
Whatever it is in the Bible. And we had it in one of our episodes. So I've just really been fascinated with all this stuff ever since. So I think that, I mean, collectively, I would just say that we're definitely living in that time period, no matter what, you know, and I think all these things are happening to kind of remind people like, yes, we are living pretty much in the end times, but I don't know. And then just today they happen to have the Roe versus Wade. I don't even know if that, I'm like, why today? Yeah, you know, that was the first thing I told Lindsay when I heard about it. I was just like, you know.
Well, you know, somebody here said, and you haven't mentioned this yet, but that today is like 6/24/2022. So 6 is 6, 24 is 2 plus 4 equals 6. And then 2022, that's 2 plus 2 plus 2 is 6. So it's like 666 today. And so they think that they did this to, like, some people, astrologists think that they released that information today to create more division and to create more arguments. I'm not saying I believe that because, you know, we don't know.
It does make you wonder, though. The Supreme Court, in my opinion, is highly compromised. And you know, let's look at, actually, we're still on Facebook right now, so I'll be a little more tame. But look at what happened in 2020. Look at the election, and look at the response of the Supreme Court. And so, as much as right now, it's like, you know, if they're doing great things now, it's good. But if you look at the state of our country, it's like, if you guys would have done the right thing about 2 years ago, you know, our country would be in a very, very different place right now. It's kind of people that are like, oh, I kind of like Fox News right now. It's like, do you remember Fox calling Arizona and Fox refusing to cover all of that stuff? It's like, do you realize the role that they played? And everyone's like, yeah, Fox is really hard on Joe Biden. It's like, they put him in office, folks.
It's so true. It's so true. And also,
Epoch Times just didn't. Like, they put what the actual electoral votes were and left them up on their website the way that they should have been for days. Like, yeah. Hey, hello. Like, they're the only ones
undecided
that
for weeks, it seemed.
Yeah.
But it's also interesting that we had this major decision with Roe v. Wade, which I have a few comments about that as it relates to, you know, the states and the Constitution. But the point I was going to make right now is that it was only a couple of days ago that they approved the jab for 6-month-old babies. And so it makes you think. It's kind of like, and I remember I posted some information on my Telegram about the decision, and there were some really good comments. Like, yeah, they're very bright, you know, bright folks that are involved in this community. And they're like, well, look, is it a coincidence that it's basically the week that they allow this to be shot into like 6-month-old babies? It's like, maybe they don't need abortion as much. You know what I mean? So it was an interesting comment, you know, because we're seeing, if you look at these statistics, like I think I saw something recently that it was an analysis of health insurance payouts that they're showing that the amount of money the average health insurance company has been paying out year over year over year. And then it showed what it was in 2021. It was like 170% increase in basically what they're paying out. So there's obviously something happening. So I don't know. It's just curious, but it makes me wonder, like, what comes next? Is this now going to be the summer of riots? Like, do they need to have their Roe v. Wade riots? Like, you know, okay, we got George Floyd. Now it's going to be Roe v. Wade ahead of the midterms.
Yeah. Well, and so I was doing some research too. I mean, I've been doing a lot of research on a lot of statistics over the past, you know, half year or so. And like some of the, because I have a lot of like very strong opinionated friends on Facebook, one extreme to the
me
other.
Me too.
You know, it's been very fascinating, actually. And I've been wanting to hear like kind of what both sides are really saying, you know, and a lot of what I'm hearing on one side, it's like, oh, well, this is really bad for women who've been raped. And what a lot of people don't understand is that abortions only count for less than 1% of.
I think it's like, was it? 0.01%.
It's actually 0.01. Yeah, it really is. And most of them, and they said that a lot of women that end up getting, you know, pregnant that way are actually, they're almost like too ashamed to even like go through with it you know, to let people know that they've been raped. Like they almost tell somebody it was somebody they knew or something like that, just because of more of that shame issue, which is sad, you know? And then the other aspect is that over 75% abortions are done for what they called social issues. And that
like they don't want to be shamed by their parents. Or...
Well, no. It's like they just don't want to have a baby.
Oh, I see.
Like it's like social issues. I mean, anything could fall into that category. You know, I'm just not ready to have a child yet, or something. You know, that
I like drinking and partying too much to raise a kid. So
yeah, it could be like something like that. You know, and actually, there was this really good tweet that I found. Actually, you wanna pull this up, Lindsay? I think it's So this is Tim Young, and this is the guy that he has Elon comment a lot of on his posts, but he made this post and he said, or tweet, do Democrats even know what the decision in Roe versus Wade was about? And this woman, I think it's woman, she responded, hell no, they don't. They don't understand that SCOTUS gave them the power to vote on people in their state that will represent their will. They don't understand that abortion is not in the Constitution and therefore not a federal, but a state right.
Bless you, Rob.
So that was Lindsay. So anyway, this is very fascinating to me because it's like everyone's kind of up in arms, but in reality, it's like, well, the federal level, this is not something because it's not written in the Constitution. It really comes back to the state, and it depends on, it's like, hey, you voted for these people. These are the people, you know, whichever way you vote, these are the people that should support what you want. So it's like, why is everybody up in arms about this?
I'm glad that you brought that up, Ben, because that was the second point that I was going to get to is for, you know, most of my adult life, I didn't know. I thought that Roe v. Wade meant that like if they overturned it, then it would ban abortion across the nation. You know, and you know, at some point I learned that, oh, okay, what it means is that it's not going to be controlled at the federal level. Mm-hmm. And what's interesting is that I think that the perspective of America with the 50 states and how the Constitution established that it's run really state by state and you keep the federal government out of things, it's very reflective of a one world government versus individual sovereign nations. Because what happens is that this is why I think it's brilliant. It's like, you know what? You can pick which state aligns with your values. And yeah. I think that they should just,
yeah, they should all just go to California.
Well, exactly. It's kind of like let anything happen, but it's like, okay, let your state. So if you want to live in a state, say California makes, you know, bestiality and all kinds of just ridiculous things legal. You know what I mean? It's like, okay, if you want that, you can go live in California. But the beautiful part about that is that you can't hide the lies. Look at Seattle, you know, look at Seattle versus a more conservative city. You know what I mean? Or look at Portland, Oregon. And that's like, so it's kind of like, as you let these states show their true colors, it's actually like you see which way of governing, you see which way of running works. And that's kind of the beauty about the different individual states. And in a lot of ways, that's one of the beauties about having different countries. It's like, okay, well, do you want to go live in Iran, or do you want to go live in North Korea, or do you want to live in America, right? Because when you have different countries, like we can see, everyone says, well,
I think at the education level of most Americans, though, that they really just want to go to like China or something and see if they can hack it in a communist state.
I guess,
yeah.
It's bizarre the different things people support without actually knowing the facts of what's going on. Like all these people with Ukrainian flags, and then they don't even know that Ukrainians are the first to like trample on gay rights, you know? And then they're putting the Ukraine flag up everywhere. And it's like, what are you doing? And why do you think that that's American? We have to support them. We have to support them. Support what? You don't even know what you're supporting. It's like, it's mindless, like going along with the flow or something.
it's kind of like, you know, you see these stories of these young women from, say, Europe, you know, say it's, they're, you know, from UK or whatever, that they're very liberal and they want to go into, you know, like Muslim countries to try to help change the culture, and they're convinced that they're going to be okay, right? Because it's just this humanitarian thing, they're going to go there and do good deeds, and they're a little bit naive, and they end up being like beheaded in a desert. Like, I mean, I'm not joking. Right. It's, the, it's a very common thing, is that,
yeah,
like they go there like on some sort of mission to like help the Muslims or whatever, because they believe that it can be peaceful, and they end up whacked up in a desert. And it's like, well, it's like, you know, you're going to see there's different cultures in different countries. I think it's, yeah, this is why I'm a strong believer in strong borders and everything, is because, well, look, this is America. And you have to play by our rules if you want to come to America. And that's what makes America great. And if you dissolve those things, well, then you have America under Biden.
Unfortunately, not under this administration. But I hear what you're saying, Seth. I'm picking up what you're laying down.
Oh, yeah.
All right, you guys. Well, let's see. We need to bring on Ben Hedges, who has his show Dirty Money. And
hey, before we do that, Ben, yes, there was one tweet that was related to what you guys were talking about, vaccines, earlier that Dane sent us, and I wanted to read it because I think it's really it's really relevant. So
yeah,
this is from a guy named Noah. Okay, that's his Twitter name. He said, "Remember, if someone young and healthy dies unexpectedly, it is improper to ask about their vaccination status. That question is only important, is only for important occasions like entry to restaurants." It's like, that actually is such a perfect tweet. Like, that's why I love the like character limit on Twitter, is because you can make such great points in like few words, you know?
That's really interesting.
All right. So Ben Hedges will be joining us, and Ben, who has, yes, this new show, Dirty Money. Ben actually is a very knowledgeable guy on finance, credit cards. He has a really successful, you know, series of channels on YouTube where he's grown very large, YouTube and TikTok. So we're excited to have him on here.
He's known as the credit shifu in some of the, in his.
And he's like a superstar in Taiwan. The dude can't even walk down the street without getting harassed.
Yeah. So we didn't get to the gun part, but we could bring Ben on and kind of briefly kind of talk about that, or we can just dive into some of the gun stuff now. What do you want?
I always cover it quickly. I mean, basically, because it's the, you know, they stood up against a, you know, something up in New York. And I used to live in New York. I lived in New York City. New York City, it's very, very, that's true. Yeah, we have New York City. It's almost impossible to get a handgun. I at one point, because I was
can't even get a BB gun, man.
No,
I was
telling
Rob the other day, I couldn't even order one on Amazon. I had to get it on eBay, and they like shipped it to me basically illegally, I found out.
Yeah. Well, so I was trying to get a handgun in New York City because I worked in the jewelry industry. And so, you know, you can, for just cause, it would have cost me about $9,000 to go through the process to get a handgun license permit in New York City. So I also had a house upstate New York, and even upstate New York, this is what I think relates to what happens with the Supreme Court, is you were not able to go purchase a handgun. Like here in Ohio, like I walked into a gun store recently, I bought a handgun, right? And it's like they do the background check, boom, are you done? And Ohio now is a constitutional carry state, meaning that I can now legally carry my handgun concealed all over the state without any kind of licensing, which is beautiful.
That's pretty crazy, actually.
It's awesome. Like, you can be a gunslinger walking around with an AR-15 across your back, which I probably won't do that. But in New York and New York State, though, you were not able to get a handgun. You had to go through, even like the countryside of New York, you had to go through this process of being approved for a handgun. So it is a really significant stance the Supreme Court has taken on the Second Amendment, which should encourage people. And it's actually good timing ahead of all the riots that are coming to be more pro Second Amendment.
It's crazy.
Did you just predict riots?
Yeah,
I think everybody is. Yeah, and actually Doc Skinner, he knew I was in Miami, and he sent me something too. He's like, hey, they're having he's like, I'm just letting you know. He's like, I just thought this was kind of crazy. They're having this gun buyback program in Miami that they'll buy your gun off of you, and then they're shipping it to Ukraine. So
What's crazy is that if you look at the prices they're paying, they're ripping you off.
Totally.
They're offering you $150 for an AR-15. It's like
what?
The cheapest AR-15 you can get is maybe $400 or $500. So your average one is probably $1,000 gun.
Just to confirm, most of these are like no questions asked, right? So it's most of these are not legally
black market guns.
Most of them are. So it's like I think that's what they're trying to really appeal to. It's like, hey, let's try to get guns off the streets by doing this gun buyback program. You know, it's not a bad thing if it's like, you know, helping clean up the crime, but because your average person that owns a gun legally is not going to sell it for $50 to send it to Ukraine.
Well, the good thing is that what they're doing is that they're taking black market guns in America and they're shipping them to Ukraine, which with some virtue signaling, where they're going to enter into the black market in Ukraine, which is what happens to most of the weapons we send over. Like we send over, you know, anti-aircraft guns over to Ukraine, and before you know it, they're being sold to the Taliban. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's all part of the cabal's criminal crime ring.
Yeah, very soon they're going to have more guns over there and more $100 bills in that area than any other place.
Yeah. Oh, man. All right. Let's go to a trailer and then we'll bring Ben Hedges on. All right, we're leaving Facebook. Bye, Facebook.
Thanks, Ben. Well done.
You're watching on Facebook, please come join us over on Rise TV. We would love to have you there. It's a lot more fun than Facebook.
The planet is dying. Reduce, reuse, recycle. We're made to feel guilty for causing climate change. But what if this is a bigger agenda being financed by big oil itself? In Edge of Wonder's explosive series, The Big Oil Industrial Complex, we ask, is it all a big scam?
When it comes to oil, it does so much more than just provide our gas. Yet, people know very little about how much oil goes into creating one of the biggest potential health threats on the planet right now. Plastic.
Bike to work. Watch your carbon footprint. Don't use plastic straws. Are the companies pointing fingers really the ones responsible for the destruction?
Why are there plastics in our blood? And if everyone cares so much, then why is there not more pressure on these massive companies to make changes? Who's really behind it all, and why are they doing this?
Is the focus on profits, making these industries turn a blind eye to what they are really doing to our bodies?
Nowadays, plastic is in everything, including all bubblegum.
Get ready for an exposé that will turn the oil industry on its head.
You won't believe what we found.
Hey, we have Ben Hedges with us.
Hey guys, great to be here.
It's good to have you here, man.
It's awesome.
Yeah, it's really nice bringing you on.
Is this the first time you've been on our show, Ben?
It is, yeah. I've watched your show many times.
Thanks, man. I've watched your show many times. That's great.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. Yeah, you've really been all over the spectrum with all kinds of different shows, including like some speaking Chinese shows. Was that you've done things like that too?
My show La Wai Kan Zhongguo, it's 700,000 subscribers on YouTube. At one time the number three internet celebrity in Taiwan. Based on search data. And we've got this new show Dirty Money, which there should be, you can search it on YouTube, search Dirty Money and then filter for channels and you'll find it, or there's probably a link below or something. But yeah, it's all about the sinister side of finance.
This is going to be some great topics. I started hearing what you guys are doing and some of the research And honestly, I mean, even with what you guys are like, what you were uncovering on from what you were telling us, like, you know, the three of us between me, Seth and Rob, like, we know a lot about like BlackRock and Vanguard and everything that's going on. But when I started looking into the oil industry, I started seeing a lot of repeated names that I've never quite seen before. And you mentioned one of them earlier to us when we were kind of like doing a, you know, just kind of talking, chatting before the live, which is State Street. So, so I definitely want to have you get into all this. And then all of us are very, you know, want to hear your thoughts on Bitcoin and the economy. And I'm sure, you know, a lot of questions that the audience has about that too. And sure, where you see the economy heading. So,
yeah, well, I'll talk about that because that was our most recent video on our channel, Dirty Money, is about the four companies that allegedly control the world. And these companies are, so BlackRock is one, then you've got Vanguard, you've got State Street, which is not very well known, and then you've got Fidelity. And it's kind of funny because Fidelity Investments, even their logo is an Illuminati pyramid, which is...
It's the eye, man. It's crazy.
Which, when people accuse them of controlling the world, it's like, you might want to be like a bit more subtle with your branding, yeah, guys.
We're just going to tell people.
Yeah. So, but the reason why people say that they control the world is that they are... basically, they're very good at controlling other companies because they are the largest issuers of ETFs and index funds in the whole country. So BlackRock has like $10 trillion under management. And many of the other four have trillions and trillions of dollars. I think it's $26 trillion between all four of them. And this money is not their money. It's money that people have invested like in their pension funds and things like that. But because these people are buying ETFs, which are...
And Ben, what is an ETF?
Yeah.
So an ETF is like a fund which will track either an index or a certain sector of the market. So it's a basket of stocks. So it's a way to increase your diversification. So if you just buy one stock, one company, you know, that can go up and down. But if you buy lots of different companies, it's a lot more stable because you've got, you know, different companies. And if you buy the whole market, like the S&P 500, then you can look at the history and you can see, okay, 8% return on average over a 30-year period, you know, 8% annual return over a 30-year period. So you can be pretty sure. But some people don't have enough money to buy one of every stock, right? Because like Tesla is like, you know, $600 or $700, or there's other stocks that are hundreds of dollars. So they, what they do is they take like maybe $5,000 and they put that in a fund, an index fund or an ETF that just tracks the market or tracks a sector of the market, like tech stocks or growth stocks. So these are called ETFs, exchange traded funds. And, but the crazy thing about it is that you don't own the stocks. The company owns the stocks, Vanguard, right, the issuer of the ETF. So they get to vote on those stocks at the shareholder meetings. So basically these four companies, and you can do this on Google, you can search, like if you search any large US company and shareholders, like for example, if you were to search say Pfizer shareholders, right, the top result will be CNN Money, and there will be a list of the shareholders, and I guarantee you the top four will most probably be these four companies.
Actually, we should do that really quick. So Lindsay, can you pull up Google and just type in, let's do Pfizer. Right. And the other one I would do is News Corp, because everyone thinks, okay, well, Fox News, let's see who actually owns Fox News. And maybe it's the same people that own Pfizer.
So yeah, click in CNN Money. There you go. Pfizer. This is the one thing CNN is good.
CNN for. Money, the first link right there, Lindsay.
Look, and the first three at the top are already Vanguard, BlackRock, State Street right there. Yep. See them?
Yeah, State Street was one of the big ones I kept seeing.
Scroll down and you'll get top 10 shareholders. You'll get a little bit more. There you go, top 10. So you got Vanguard, you've got SSGA, which is State Street.
That is State Street. Wow. Okay.
SSGA. And then you see Geode Capital Management. Yes. This is a company that's actually started by Pfizer. By Fidelity back in like 2001, and then spun off as an independent company in 2003, but still runs a lot of Fidelity funds. So it's kind of like Fidelity in disguise.
Capital Research is another one that I kept seeing a lot in the research I was doing as well.
Yeah. So yeah, there's a few others. In addition to these four, there's a few others. Capital Research is one of them. And then also Charles Schwab, they issue ETFs as well. And So basically what these companies can do, because they officially own the shares that are in their ETFs, they can vote at the shareholder meeting. So they can basically put whoever they want on the board of these companies. So that's why you see a lot of companies seem to have the exact same agenda at the same time. You know, like all the social media companies censoring, you know, putting the little labels, like they all decided to do it at the same time. Or like how every company in June, Pandas, you know, puts a rainbow in their logo, right? Like whether you support that or not. But it's pandering, you know, and it's the exact same agenda at the exact same time. And there's actually bill. Go ahead.
I was going to say that, you know, I think what you're describing, I first heard this term in when I was interviewing a guy named David Martin, who's very like a really bright guy, but he referred to it as a corporatocracy. And what he was talking about is how the world, there's News Corp. So there's which owns, that's Fox News. And what do you got there?
So Vanguard,
same ones.
Yeah, SSGA is State Street, and then maybe further down you'll have Geode Capital Management.
Geode right there, man. Wow. Yeah.
But that's what he was, you know, talking about, and it really got me kind of on a little bit of a rabbit hole into that. But it's interesting to think about the fact that we think that there are individual nation states, but in a lot of ways, it's actually there's a global corporatocracy that is controlling so much of what happens in the world that they actually, it goes way beyond the border of America and everything.
And there's actually, yeah. And interestingly, there's actually a bill right now called the Index Act, INDEX. That's the acronym for it. Sponsored by Senator Pat Toomey and another senator from Alaska. He was interviewed the other day on Maria Bartiromo of Fox Business. And the Index Act is actually to try and deal with this problem, basically to say that if you have bought an ETF, you get the right to vote on the shares, not Vanguard, not State Street, etc. I don't know whether this will be ever make it through the Senate, though. Because,
no way, man.
No. I mean, it's a nice thought. Yeah, there you go.
It is. At least somebody's recognizing the lack of control here. You know.
But... Yeah.
So Ben,
go ahead, Rob. Okay, I'll just ask this really quick. So the burning question in my mind is that, like, I think, you know, there are people out there that are aware of the Black Rocks, the Vanguards of the world, right? And I think that it's been it's being explained more and more to people how these corporations are actually controlling things. But there's a little bit of I would kind of be curious to hear what your thinking is revolved around how BlackRock, Vanguard, and these corporations are tied to the World Economic Forum and how they relate. Because the World Economic Forum is the one that's actually running the sort of ideological wing of these corporations and the agendas that they're pushing from the ESG scores that they've kind of developed over time. And I'm wondering, you know, is there a direct connection here? Like, what's your take on that?
Well, yeah, I mean, we did a video actually a few days last week or the week before called 10 Dystopian Things the World Economic Forum is Trying to Do to You. And this was based on an article from Zero Hedge that they basically go through all these crazy things like putting, you know, QR codes on your clothing or putting like microchips inside medicines. And that's no conspiracy theory. The CEO of Pfizer is actually on video at the World Economic Forum talking about pills with microchips inside them, right? That send out a signal. They send out a signal to prove that you've taken the medicine, right, to your insurance company. And if you don't take it, maybe your premium rises or something like that. I don't know. But to me, it seems like the World Economic Forum is kind of like a sort of medium where they put out these ideas of what they want to do, right? They lay out the sort of roadmap. And then all these companies are then the sort of the next layer that sort of enact what this kind of like agenda is, you know. And if you look at all these, you know, a lot of the CEOs of these companies and also people in various cabinets and prime ministers and presidents across the world, a lot of them have been through the World Economic Forum Young Global Leaders program. So Klaus Schwab, the head of the World Economic Forum, he was actually on video talking about how they've penetrated half of Justin Trudeau's cabinet in Canada. These people have all been through the Young Global Leaders program.
Oh yeah.
So yeah, I mean, it's like, it's kind of out in the open what they're showing you know, what they've done, right? They're not, this is no conspiracy theory. It's all on the record, on video and on tape and stuff. And they admit to it. So there is definitely an agenda, and the World Economic Forum probably is playing a very big role in guiding an agenda that then filters down or trickles down through companies in different countries and basically infiltrates the whole world. Yeah.
So Ben, one of the questions that I had, and I'll share a little bit of my research, and I really want to hear your perspective on it, is if these four companies, let's just look at BlackRock and Vanguard, for instance, which are typically seem to be the two biggest ones. So if BlackRock and Vanguard control all these companies around the world, like most of them, who controls BlackRock and Vanguard? And so what I looked at with this is that, guess who the biggest shareholder of BlackRock is?
Probably Vanguard.
And so what's crazy is that, here's what's interesting, is that Vanguard is not a publicly traded company. BlackRock is publicly traded. So you can trace all of BlackRock's ownership. You can see who all the majority shareholders are, everything. Hey, Lindsay, can you make me the big guy?
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's okay. Anyway,
I just want you to know you are
small in the corner up there. I had the FNL logo right on my face, and all you could see was like FNL and a beard. So anyway, here's what got interesting is, because I was trying to think, because there's a lot of people that say, well, okay, the world's run by the central banks, and the central banks are run by the Rothschilds and the 13 families. And so I was thinking, okay, well, if you break down this whole idea of corporatocracy and how so much of the world is run by these corporations, which are then run by these investment firms. Well, who runs these firms? And I got in this rabbit hole of researching and realized that BlackRock, which is public, actually the majority shareholder is Vanguard. But if you look into Vanguard, Vanguard is composed of a bunch of funds. So Vanguard is it's like a corporate veil. You can't pierce past that veil to see who actually owns Vanguard. And so my speculation was that Vanguard, which actually is a majority shareholder of BlackRock, is that Vanguard was actually the mechanism through which these wealthy elites were able to enact their control on the world through a single company of Vanguard, because it's all private and you can't see who owns the funds that actually own Vanguard.
Wow. Yeah, that's super interesting. I mean, I haven't looked that far into it, but maybe that could be like for a sequel video. but yeah, I mean, basically the ones that interlock, because a lot of them have interlocking ownership stakes with each other, but they're actually using your money to have ownership of these companies. It's not even their money, right? Because it's your pension fund in their ETF. So, but yeah, that's pretty interesting that Vanguard is kind of like the, because yeah, if you have a private company, then it's kind of easier to hide who really owns it.
You know, there was I want to say it was Bill Cooper who wrote Behold a Pale Horse, but I'm not sure if it was him or not. But so Atari, one of their really popular games, and it was actually one of the ones I liked, was called Vanguard. And there's in the occult world, there's something with the word Vanguard. And I read this a while ago, I've been trying to find it more recently, and I couldn't find it, and I couldn't remember, but I'm definitely going to follow up with that. But do you know, Rob?
No, I don't off the top of my head, but I've come across this multiple times, research over the years. And it's like that while they were talking, I was like, I've got to look into this word, because they're using it for, I mean, BlackRock is easily traceable.
BlackRock.
Like, you know, BlackRock is like that. There's so much around the term BlackRock that is meaningful to these knuckleheads. But Vanguard was something had even come up over the last couple of months on a film or something, and I was like, oh, that's a lead for Vanguard, and then I just forgot.
I know, I'm the same way too, so I'll definitely follow up with that, because I'm very curious about it. So Lindsay, maybe you can look up Atari video Vanguard game conspiracy or something.
I don't think we're going to find that answer in an Atari game, but
I don't think so. Well, it was something related to the game, though. It was some kind of thing, but it was more with the word Vanguard itself. But anyway, but yeah, Ben, this is all like super, super fascinating.
Through the shareholder, basically, because they're the shareholders, they're the ones dictating what these companies do, which people don't really understand. And like, how did we shift, Ben, from being a world where corporations cared about making profit for their shareholders to a place where now it's only agenda that is they're worried about. They're losing tons of cash by implementing these agendas and then still just doing it anyway. How did that happen? What happened?
Yeah, I mean, like Disney with Buzz Lightyear in recent, last weekend, right?
Star Wars has done this. I mean, multiple different Hollywood agencies have gone full retard with this stuff.
And Yeah, Star Wars is so sad what happened to Star Wars. Sad. And then the one Star Wars thing that was really good, which was The Mandalorian, one of the best characters gets kicked out because of a certain post on social media.
Yes.
Gina Carano. Yeah.
There's rumors that they're bringing her back.
What's his name? The guy who plays the Mandalorian guy. He's Apple like
or whatever.
Yeah, he started to get really upset at fans and stuff. So he's out, and they're actually hiring Carl Urban to come in and play the Mandalorian now. So it's like
it doesn't really matter who plays it.
What? The helmet? He's not playing it anymore.
No, he something happened, and he started getting angry at fans, and then they had to like mitigate it, so they got rid of him.
Wow, dude, I didn't even hear about that. That's crazy.
Yeah, Gina Carano actually talked a lot of crap about him because they were like pretty tight on the set, and then when all of that stuff started going down, he just backed away and didn't back her up, and she was just like, "Who does that?" You know, I mean.
Yeah, it's a shame because, you know, John Favreau, I think they wrote that character especially for her.
And, yeah, they did. That's right.
And he was like really upset when she was kicked out by Disney and that he didn't want to kick her out. So it'd be great if they could bring her back. What was the we kind of got off the topic.
Well, we're talking about how these companies have like adopted wokeness and at the expense of profit. Like they're losing tons of profit. You have the Kathleen Kennedys of the world destroying Star Wars, destroying male characters, and then everybody is like not spending money anymore on these products or abandoning the products, and then the profit goes to hell in a handbag. And so why? How did this happen?
You know what? I think that they think that because after, you know, the invention of the ETF and basically them being able to get into this situation where they can kind of control almost all the companies basically in the S&P 500, they think that if they all do it at the same time, if everyone does it, then you have no choice, right? You have nowhere else to go. So people would just kind of accept, okay, this is the way it is, right? But, you know, if you're the majority shareholder in something, just like we've seen Elon Musk in recent weeks, you know, coming in to buy Twitter, he first became the majority shareholder, and then he was able to go in there and actually start changing stuff around, right? And then you have, if you're a majority shareholder, you have controlling votes, or if you have a few companies that have the same agenda, they can control the voting on the board. So basically, that's what these massive financial companies can do. You know, they can put in their own executives to the board, and then make those executives have a certain agenda for these companies. And right now, it is a woke agenda. But as we see, you know, maybe if Elon Musk succeeds in buying Twitter, we're going to see something different happening with Twitter. And maybe we'll see something else happening with other companies. You know, maybe there's a sort of a bit of a change going on where like a transfer of wealth, where you're going to go from these, you know, these massive ETFs to actual ownership by people who care about, you know, the agenda in certain key companies, perhaps.
So can I, you guys mind if I read a segment from an article that I found that was part of my previous research with this topic is really interesting. Mm-hmm. And so what it says here, it says, interestingly, Vanguard is the largest shareholder of BlackRock as of March 2021. Vanguard itself, on the other hand, has a unique corporate structure that makes its ownership more difficult to discern. It's owned by its various funds, which in turn are owned by the shareholders. Aside from these shareholders, it has no outside investors and is not publicly traded. There's a quote. It says, "The elite who own Vanguard apparently do not like being in the spotlight, but of course they cannot hide from who's willing to dig. Reports from Oxfam and Bloomberg say that 1% of the world together owns more money than the other 99%. So in other words, these two investment companies, Vanguard and BlackRock, hold a monopoly in all industries in the world, and they in turn are owned by the richest families in the world, some of whom are royalty and who have been rich since before the Industrial Revolution. While it would take time to sift through all of Vanguard's funds to identify individual shareholders and therefore owners of Vanguard, a quick look-see suggests Rothschild Investment Corp and the Edmund de Rothschild Holding are two such stakeholders. There's a video that also identifies that the Italian Orsini family, the American Bush family, the British royal family, the DuPont family, the Morgans, Vanderbilt, and Rockefellers as Vanguard owners.
There you go.
I'd throw that out there because I know that, like,
wow.
So a lot of people don't, a lot of people pay attention to what they consider the 13 families over here in the West as being the 13 families. But a lot of research shows that there's actually like the black nobility families in Europe are actually the strongest families. And the Orsinis are one of those families. Mm-hmm. And if you look at who the Rothschilds are marrying, you find them marrying families like the Aldobrandinis and stuff like that. And these are the families that like, there's long histories that you can like go into, and every single one of those families in Europe were, it was only one of these, these families that were popes all during, like only one, like basically these were the families that were always the families that were popes. Mm-hmm. So what I'm trying to say is that during the time of kings in Europe, when they had no way of controlling all of the different countries with all of these different kings, God's kings, whatever you want to call them, the families of God, what happened was they created the Holy Roman Empire basically so that these families could come in and rule via the Pope all of these different countries in Europe. So they created a king of kings in Europe. And it was always these families, and some of them named in that article, that were popes throughout the ages.
And like, I'm doing a lot of research on the oil, and that, it really kind of seems that the Rockefellers were more new to all of this. You know, it was
like American money, right?
Yeah, yeah. So like, when you look at the Rothschilds and the Orsinis, it's like they've been around for a long time. So it just, you know, kind of with all everything that happened, and also another take on Vanguard. So Lindsay reminded me, Nixium. Keith Raniere, who was in charge of the Nixium sex cult, they called him Vanguard. That was the other thing that was really weird. And also, Rob, I just happened to look up the
Atari game
Mandalorian thing, and it looks like that's a rumor. It doesn't look like it's true, actually.
That what? No.
No, Carl Urban came out saying that he's not replacing him.
Well, but not yet.
Okay, that was like a month ago anyway.
Yeah, so we'll see. It's developing. Like Pablo Pascal or whatever his name is like this close to just like taking off. And so they've been talking to Carl Urban to replace him. And they're not sure exactly what's going to happen. The problem is Pablo Pascal wanted to do more of the series with his helmet off. He wanted to be known as the actor who plays the Mandalorian. And they were like, nah, that's just like, that's not the deal. Like, we need the mask.
I thought that the Mandalorian was one of the 13 bloodlines.
It should be.
Should be.
Yeah. It should be. That's why he says this is the way all the time.
Yeah, seriously. But that's that's very fascinating what you found there, Seth. Very fascinating.
Yeah, it's actually an article that came out that I ended up doing a lot of shows based upon what this research led me to. It's an article that says it's the same shady people own Big Pharma and the media. And I think it was originally published on Children's Health Defense or one of the, you know, through one of the doctors, or maybe it was actually Dr. Mercola that published it. But it's actually, it's an incredible article that goes deep into just showing that the same companies that own Big Pharma are the same companies that own the media. And this led me on a really long rabbit, you know, kind of digging in, following the white rabbit to find out just some crazy information.
Wow.
Yeah, that's nuts. And it is true. It's like you're right on top of it. If it's like, who are these companies? Who owns these companies? And then you keep digging in and it just keeps going up to that one company, Vanguard. So that's like insane. I mean, and the fact that they've escaped exposure is like the biggest anomaly of them all. It's like, how could a company this big that owns everything, hey, they own everything, how could they go under the radar for this long?
Because they do own everything. It's like they own the media. So, hey, we're going to pay you to not talk about us.
Well, that part is easy, but it's like, even among people that are like researching, you know, conspiracies, even like it's not like Vanguard is number one on their list. They're like talking about all of this stuff, which they probably like, you know? It's like,
it's true because even as long as we were doing the show, it wasn't anything that I really, that, you know,
yeah.
I was just, when I first heard about it, I was just like, what? Because it's actually kind of hard to research, as you guys probably kind of realize that too, right? I mean, it's like you were just saying, you're trying to research this company and it's not publicly traded. So it's very hard to find out, like, really the nuts and bolts of, like, who is part of this and how does the structure work in this company, you know?
Yeah, this could perhaps be a sequel to our original video. And, you know, I don't know, we might get kicked off YouTube for this, but.
Well, that's what, right.
This feels like old Edge of Wonder days, doesn't it?
Yeah. Have you seen, what was it? Was it season one of Stranger Things, when they find that crazy journalist guy. And they're trying to figure out how to write an article on this that's going to help people understand. And they realize that in order to get people to accept it, you have to pull way back and only like, basically, like, Ben and I went too far.
He kept saying you have to water it down.
Water it down, right? Water it down. So if you just kind of like ask a question at the end that just raises it, yeah, there he is.
Yeah, that guy.
That'll be enough without telling them everything, you know?
Yeah. Or because the other aspect is, it's like, or people just won't believe you because it sounds too crazy.
Yeah, that's what we're trying to do right now. Like on YouTube, we're not going too deep, and we're also using like stuff that's really backed up with facts, you know, undeniable facts. And the thing about financial stuff is that there's enough out there that's like very easy to prove factual, that's incredibly shocking without going really into the realms of conspiracy theories, you know, like even the Vanguard stuff and the four companies and all these things, like the ownership is public. You can just search it right there. Yep. So, you know, there is enough to shock people.
So Ben, I want to get your take on, earlier this week on Tuesday, I had on Zach Voorhees, not Zach Voorhees, Zach Payne, who is Red Pill 78, and he's done a lot of stuff. He really, he's much more into crypto than I am. And this is after the weekend where, you know, late last week, over the weekend, we saw, you know, Bitcoin was down to 17,000 or something. I mean, it was a pretty frightening time for Bitcoin. And also crypto in general, we had seen, had lost, I think it was 2/3 of its overall market value, from around $3 trillion down to about $1 trillion in total market value. So, you know, I'll first give you my own biases. I'm someone that, like, I am not into digital currency. I don't trust it. Like, I don't trust my money in the bank. Like, I'd rather have, you know, like a sandwich bag of cash, right? That's just how I am. So I'm definitely on that side of things. But, Rob,
sandwich bag of no, just the imagery. That was like just a great way to say it. Oh, well,
actually, that comes from my old jewelry. My old jewelry.
Here, honey.
Well, no, because actually a lot. So I used to work in the diamond district. I had a few different jewelry businesses, and a lot of people, when they're like transporting goods, they would intentionally put, like, they'd be carrying like $60,000 in cash in a greasy old sandwich bag as they're walking around. You know, that's just they disguise it. And sometimes I had to carry, like, I think probably the biggest diamond I was carrying was probably about close to $1 million diamond, right? Like walking around the streets of New York, carrying this diamond to go show a client. And it's like, it's really frightening. So you want to intentionally not look like you're carrying a lot of money on you. So that's where the sandwich bag of cash thing came. But back to the question with you, Ben, is, you know, with where things are headed and based on like my own perception, what I'm seeing right now is that, you know, since they pulled the dollar off the gold, you know, being, you know, Nixon pulled the gold off the dollar, the gold standard, they've just been pumping and pumping and pumping, and they've been funding the wars and everything with the US dollar, and they've been hiding the inflation of it, you know, because the amount of money that we've printed in the past 2 years is, it's insane. But what I can see happening is that they're doing it, they're trying to squeeze as much out of it as they can before it collapses, and before they use that collapse to try to force us into a central bank digital currency, something they can merge with the social credit score system, vaccine passport, etc. Now, what we also have is we have the BRICS nations. We had China, Russian, in Russia, they're working to actually, what they say, de-dollarize the world. They're working to make it so that the U.S. dollar is not the petrodollar, not the reserve currency, which would collapse our entire financial system here in the West, which would cause tidal waves across the whole world. So my question for you is, where do you see crypto fitting into all this? As we see the centralized one world government Great Reset trying to have a controlled digital currency, where do you see crypto? And do you think that crypto is going to fall with, say, the U.S. dollar, or with it, or do you think that we should return to like a gold and silver bartering society, or do you have hope for the future of crypto?
Okay. So a few things. So first of all, the inflation, because I did a video about this that's going to be coming out. Actually one on my other channel, but another one that's coming out next week. And if you go back to the 1990s and then even further back to the 1980s, the method they used to work out inflation was different to the method they use now. So if you use the 1980 method, and there is a website by an economist, John Williams, it's called Shadow Stats, and he shows you how high inflation would be if they used the 1980 method, and it's actually double. So right now it's 8.6%. So it'd be more like 16% if we use the 1980 method of working out inflation. And that is because inflation used to be a cost of goods index, and they've now changed it to a cost of living index, where they account for substitution. So what that means is, sorry, this is a little long winded, but what that means is
this
that
is great.
If inflation is going up, they account for people buying worse quality products in order to, lessen the impact of inflation. So for example, if you normally buy organic eggs, the prices start going up, so people start buying regular eggs. So they account for that now. So it's actually not a true cost of goods index. So using this method, they can make it look like inflation isn't as high as it actually is. But if you were buying, if you're looking at the cost of the exact same basket of goods, it's actually like double, at least double what it is, what the official stat is.
Man, I have a quick question for you, Ben.
I really thought John Williams was a music composer. That's amazing.
Yeah, I mean, he's an economist. Well, it's a different guy, obviously, but yeah, it's the same name.
Quick question as it relates to that, Ben, is does that also account for shrinkflation? Like where, say you used to buy a bag of chips for $3 and it had 18 ounces of chips in it, whereas now the same bag of chips is $3 but actually has 12 ounces of chips. So because that's another way that they're hiding inflation. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it probably doesn't account for that. Because definitely, for example, I was just hearing on the news today that sommeliers in New York City, they are only pouring like 4 ounces instead of 5 ounces in the wine glasses now and selling it for the same price, right? To hide the inflation, right? New York City restaurants. So, yeah, and there's also the fact that the basket of goods, you might not buy the same goods that they're basing the official stats on, right? So I actually made a spreadsheet a while back where you've got all of the different, because the Bureau of Labor Statistics breaks down inflation into different sectors of the economy, right? So you've got grocery, you've got dining out, you've got used cars, new cars, you've got apparel, and they're all inflating at different rates. And so you might spend more on groceries than the so-called average person. So you can actually work out a customized inflation rate for yourself by looking at your budget and taking the different numbers from the Bureau of Labor Statistics and putting your spending into that. And actually, I did it for myself, and my inflation rate was higher. Even using the new modern way of working it out, my inflation rate was actually higher than the official inflation rate. But anyway, so I know this question was about crypto, so we should probably
it's all of it, because I'm really wanting to hear your perspective on the inflation and really what's going on. So, and I didn't even know any of this about this graph or what this meant. So this has been amazing.
Let me put the I'll put the actual inflation thing here so you guys could maybe put it on screen. Just a second. So yeah, that's the I put it in the chat, so maybe if you can get it on screen, you can show people. But yeah, there was an article in Morningstar on this about, a customized inflation rate, where depending on where your spending is, your inflation actually might be higher. And then if you use the 1980 method of working out inflation, your inflation could be double that again So you could be at a like 20% inflation per year instead of the 8.6 that they are.
Wow. Yeah, and I mean, look at what's happened to cars since COVID happened. Used cars are up like,
Like
almost 30. Like you have a car with 70,000 miles on it, and they're selling it for $20,000 or something, and it's like a new car would be 25,000 or 30,000. What is the point of getting that car, that used car? It doesn't make any sense.
Let alone also fuel, food. Like I'm hearing that there's farmers saying the eggs are going to be a dollar an egg, so $12 a dozen by the end of the year. I'm also hearing people talking about how diesel fuel is going to be $10 a gallon by the end of the year. Like, like that's, you know, diesel like a year, 2 years ago could have been $2.50 a gallon. Like that's 400% inflation on that one commodity.
So you, you can see this basically is the inflation spreadsheet. So I put all my spending, this is my monthly budget, right? Like $1,250 on food. It's a family of four, so, you know. But
you eat a lot.
Well, that's two kids as well. Yeah, so my total was 13.8%. And then if you use the 1990 method, it's 20%. Use the 1980 method, it's 27%. So, you know, it's, yeah, the actual figures are kind of an illusion. And inflation is likely a lot higher and different for different people, depending on what they spend. So, but yeah, going to like the question on crypto and Bitcoin. So first of all, like Bitcoin, when it crashes, it normally crashes about 80%. So if you go back and you look at the previous crashes back in like 2018 or 2019? Anyway, when it went to 20,000 and then it crashed back down, and then the previous crashes before that, it normally crashes 80%. So the crash that we've had now is, although it feels crazy and it's making a lot of companies go out of business. Like actually I heard today Coinbase Pro just shut down, the pro version of Coinbase, after 4 years, it just shut down today, or it's shutting down. Celsius is in big trouble right now. They've frozen withdrawals from their protocol. Anchor Protocol, which I had about $1,500 in, a few weeks ago, it's gone to zero, which is crazy. I don't really care. You know, it wasn't a huge amount, but, you know the risks, right? And diversify is the key. But yeah, people used to think crypto was like a hedge against inflation. But in more recent years, it has been moving in line with stocks. So I think it has become a lot more mainstream now. And it's not, the prices are not really moving in the same way. It's kind of become a incredibly volatile version of the stock market now. You know,
a good way to
stock
say
market's
it.
Down 20%. The S&P 500 is down 20%. Crypto is down 80%. Bitcoin down 80%. And some altcoins are down 90%. Actually Bitcoin's come back up a little bit now, but so I would say, you know, it depends, it really depends what happens in the future, but when I would recommend to people, give people advice, which is not financial advice because I'm not a CPA, but just for educational or entertainment purposes only, I would say like diversification is really the key. So I would not put too much of my portfolio into crypto. You know, a lot of financial advisors recommend 5%. You might want to go 10-15%, especially now because it's low. But it's only been around for like 10-13 years, so it's such a new type of, you know,
it's a new market.
It's a new market. Yes,
yeah, so it still is.
It's such a new type of thing. Anything could happen, really. Like there's not, it's not like with the S&P 500, we can look back at like over 100 years of data and know that it has on average gone up like 8% a year, inflation adjusted for like the past 90 years or whatever. It's so new. Who knows what happens? And they can also, cause it's less regulated than, you know, the stock market, they can manipulate it in different ways as well. So if you're someone who really researches and you understand how they manipulate it, you can actually trade and look for buying opportunities. But if you're someone who's not as knowledgeable, I would definitely say be careful. You know, you could buy low, you could buy now and put, you know, 5% of your portfolio into it. But I would say just like, make sure you're diversified, you know, have stocks, have gold, have real estate. You know, I think in the future, things that are physical are going to be a lot more valuable, especially with other countries thinking about going back onto the gold standard. You know, I think things like that actually are going to be taken more seriously in the future. Also land and property. Like right now I'm buying property and taking out long-term debt as well, because with inflation, owners of long-term debt benefit. So because you can kind of inflate out of your debt. So yeah, if you actually, get a mortgage.
Yeah, can you explain what
Yeah, that's a really good question that I have that I've been really trying to dig into this is that, so I recently bought a house less than a year ago. We're on a 30-year fixed mortgage. I think it's at like 3.25%, which is amazing, right?
You got the jackpot, man. Yeah.
Yeah. So, but what is, okay, so what happens, like, because I've been thinking, okay, so say I have an extra, say $5,000. You know, should I buy, I'm thinking, okay, do I buy bullets? Do I buy wheat? Do I buy gold, silver? Or should I pay down the principal of my home? Right. Bullets. So do you think?
Do not pay down the principal of your home. There is really? No point doing that. Because
really?
Yeah. Because you're going to inflate out of your debt. Like every year, think about it. If you use that $5,000 to pay down your debt now, that costs you $5,000, right? But in the future, the amount of money that you're going to, your income is going to rise with inflation, okay? Because money is going to be worth less. So if you pay $5,000 down 10 years from now, it might only cost you the equivalent of $3,000 now.
Yeah.
Okay. Because it's the decline in the purchasing power of money, right? So if inflation is going at 8.6%, next year, $100 would only buy the same amount of stuff as $91.4 would this year, right?
So it's kind of like whoever holds the debt, that debt that they're holding keeps going down in value because of inflation. But I guess, and that makes sense to me. Now that's also like, I was talking to a friend recently who was also buying a house, and I was saying, look, man, buy a house for that same reason. But I guess the question is that, do banks have something in the contract where is it if inflation goes out of hand that they'll seize your property or
No, they don't. Not on a 30-year fix. But what they do have in the contract is the amortization schedule, which means that you pay the interest first. Okay. So you'll have, if you look on your mortgage dashboard or whatever, like for example, my one, right, is I think it's $1,700 a month. That includes like taxes and insurance, but the amount of mortgage, it's like maybe $250 goes towards the principal of the home and $750 goes towards the interest. And there's a point in the middle of your mortgage where the two...
About 10 years.
Yeah, the graph crosses and you're suddenly paying more in principal and less in
interest.
So yeah. Basically you pay them the interest first so they get the money while it's still worth more. And then
that's insane, man. Yeah.
So that's good for the bank. But you know, it's also okay for you because your mortgage payment of $1,700. Well, my one is $1,700. It will never change in 30 years. So in 30 years' time, $1,700 might be worth the equivalent of only $1,000 now. So basically my mortgage payment halved, you know, in the later years. So that's why people say never pay it off early. Don't pay it off early because there's going to be inflation. Your salary will rise. You know, even if you don't get promotions and stuff, it'll still rise in line because they try to raise
so
them in line with
inflation. Is happening so fast now that by next year, a $3,000 mortgage is going to be half of what it is now.
Half? I don't think half.
Like it'll be like, I know, I'm well, joking
it
around.
It was 100% inflation, right?
8 years. So right now at 8.5%, 8.6%, it will take 8 years for your money to halve in value.
But if the percentage is way higher of inflation, then it's going to have faster, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. If it could. So if it was at 50%, I guess that would be 1 year. But the rule of 72, you just divide 72 by 8 by the inflation rate, or the inflation rate divided by 72. And then you get the figure. So if at the current inflation rate, 8.6%, it will take 8 years for your money to halve in value.
So that's so it's interesting because one way I look at this is people say, what do I invest in? And I really believe the best investments are honestly like gold bullets, right? Bullets. I think gold and silver are artificially held down, but now that you have countries like Russia backing their currency with gold, they can only do that for so long. Like there's talks of the yuan being backed by gold, et cetera. But bullets are a good example. Like, you know, at the beginning of the pandemic, I bought a bunch of 9mm ammo and I was paying 30 cents a round. I could probably sell that ammo for 60 cents a round now. Right. Wow. That's insane. It also, like, so yesterday I got a delivery of diesel. I got a diesel tractor. I got 300 gallons of diesel at $5.70 per gallon. If that diesel's 10 bucks a gallon, you know, by Christmas, if I wanted to sell that. So it's kind of like I'm looking at this from a more of a hoarding perspective and a prepping perspective. But if you're someone that wants to play the market and make good money, like buy commodities that people need that, you know, will increase in value, and you can sell them for 100% profit in probably 6 months.
Where, yeah. Where Seth lives in Ohio, the two most the two most valuable things are bullets and mullets. Those two things are probably. If you can purchase more of those, then you're actually in really good shape.
Like, so the thing about gold and silver, I mean, like, yeah, I got a chunk of silver here. Like, that's a 10 ounce. But like, I just keep this lying around. It's for fun. There's a paperweight thing. But I haven't bought that much physical because it requires a sort of Mad Max type situation for gold and silver to really rise, right? Or maybe that's an exaggeration, but significant changes in the world, right? So a lot of people have bought gold and silver over the years, but been disappointed, you know, because they're like, oh, nothing happened. You know, they're artificially keeping the market down. It would require a significant change in the world. Some people think that is coming, but who knows when, right? So gold and silver, I feel like, again, it's diversification. Like, put 5% of your portfolio in gold and silver, put like 5% into crypto, like Bitcoin. Personally, I really like real estate. But then I think also in the future, yeah, like investing in even growing your own food may be a really great investment because we keep hearing about food shortages coming, right? We had the baby formula shortage. I've got like my Patriot Supply stuff in my basement still from the pandemic, right? Like a huge crate of it, loads of water and everything. But I've always thought about, yeah, investing in actually growing food. I mean, it's the ultimate hack. It's the ultimate two fingers to the corporations as well, because it like comes out of the ground almost for free, right? And if you shave the seed,
amazing.
Yeah, you save the seed, yeah. The next year is free apart from your labor. So lots of different types of investments. I like property. I'm actually building a house right now to rent out as a holiday cabin. And that's using long-term debt because it's a loan for that, right? So I have a locked interest rate right now at about 4%. And obviously interest. So people who bought houses like last year and this year, they have like really hit the jackpot if they've got like a 3 or 4% interest rate and then they're fixed for 30 years. And they've got high inflation and they've got the interest rate really low. That's the perfect recipe for, you know, a great investment. Yeah.
Well, you guys, we need to, we're a little late now. We need to play a trailer. We also are going to go into, dig deep. Ben, you'll be with us. We'll be answering audience questions there. So, yeah, this has been awesome. And we'll definitely continue this conversation. Where can people find you, Ben?
So yeah, if you want to check out our YouTube show, Dirty Money, it's a really new channel, just started it about a month ago. So you can search on YouTube, Dirty Money, and then filter for channels because it's a small channel so far. So it doesn't really show up if you just search Dirty Money. So be sure to filter for channels and it should be the first result, Dirty Money. It's a kind of neon logo.
Make sure you subscribe to that channel. Don't just search for it, but subscribe to it and hit the notification bell.
We're on Rumble too as well. On Rumble as well.
You're on so Rumble. I wanted to read a quick comment. This is actually really helpful from Krakenho, who commented and said, economist Peter Schiff also recommends keeping your debt if the interest rate is lower than the inflation rate. So in which case the inflation benefits the debt holders and banks lose. Yeah. So that's kind of a good, you know, look at that. It's okay. If inflation's 8% and your credit card is 30%, we'll pay off your credit card. But if your house is at 4%, then you're probably going to be actually benefiting from that. And actually, I just want to thank you, Ben, for engaging in this conversation. This is like my mind. Someone says, set this brainstorming. It's like, my mind's on overdrive with this kind of discussion. And maybe at some point I can have you on my Man in America show. Cause I think a lot of the audience I've got out on Rumble and YouTube would love to, you know, kind of hear in on this conversation.
Oh yeah, sure. Definitely.
That's great. Yeah. And before we go over, guys, I also just wanted to say that I'm going to be in Mount Shasta next week for an awesome UFO event, and people like Laura Eisenhower, Brad Olson, Apollo Asteria, and Raymond Keller. They're all going to be there. It's going to be really awesome. So if you're in the area or you want to come, come join us. I'll be there from the 7th to the 10th. And if you get tickets, we get 10% from the proceeds of those tickets. So it's thepromisedreveal.net. And yeah, so if you're going, I will see you guys there.
Also, it makes me think the same weekend, I think it's July 8th and 9th, I will be in Virginia Beach for the Reawakened Tour. So I'll be speaking there. I think that Don Jr. is going to be at this one speaking.
Right.
That'll be great. So I should be able to meet him. Let's see. Eric Trump, I think, should be there. General Flynn, you know, Mike Lindell, a lot of the same, you know, people that are out there really, you know, shaking things up in this country. So that's going to be in Virginia Beach. And I believe the website for that is timetofreeamerica.com, where you can buy tickets.
Nice. All right. Let's play a trailer and head over to ourrise.tv.
Nothing actually makes sense about the 2017 shooting, especially Campos's story. Our findings on this even shocked us at Edge of Wonder, and it showed that all of what we learned is connected.
Here is the real drop of the hammer.
The real kicker here was what Hodge posted at 12:27 a.m. on October 2nd.
This showed how much they messed up on the timeline when they were recounting all these events. And after watching a lot of videos, a lot of this doesn't add up.
How in the world are we not seeing any of this footage? The only reason I can think of is because it would show what actually happened.
But there is still more to all of this.
A bacterium infected a flea. A flea hitched a ride on a rat. A rat spread the Black Death to all of Europe. Millions dead, dirty peasants infected. Or is there more to the story? What if our advanced mindset of the future caused us to miss something about the past? What if something tied together every epidemic throughout time? What if people weren't just reacting to plagues, but plagues actually reacted to people? This is the first deep dive of its kind into a part of plagues never before acknowledged. You'll never look at history the same way again.
So let's think about it. What exactly is a plague?
Living in the future, it's easy to look at the people of the past and pass judgment.
But there have been numerous plagues over humanity's history and even until today.
I mean, this type of look at plagues we did might be the kind of deep dive nobody has ever done before on possibly the most covered subject in history.
Plagued, Part 1, When Society Falls. Only on edgeofwonder.tv.
It was a good old days when